and welcome to this week's episode, number 24 already, to In the Shadow of the Evening Trees. I'm Jennifer Von Ebers.
I'm David Von Ebers.
And one thing I was thinking about is, which is kind of crazy.
Just one thing?
Well, I think about a lot of things, is why is it almost May?
How did that happen?
Where's this year gone by so far? And I don't like that it's going by so fast.
1 month into the second quarter.
Yes.
If you're paying attention.
That is true. It just seems like, I don't know, maybe the older we get, the faster time goes.
That's not a good thing.
It isn't.
You don't want that to happen.
I know, but it just seems like there's Christmas, and then there's January, and the next thing you know, we're in March, now we're almost in May, and it's kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy, and it's our last episode before we take a little break.
Yes, going on holiday.
We mentioned that last time. We won't belabor the point necessarily, but we'll be off
if
for a couple
If you missed
weeks.
It, though, we are going to Ireland, so
we can belabor
you don't have
the point.
To. Yeah, you don't have to go back and you can listen to it. But if you're new to this episode, we're going to Ireland, so leaving a week from today.
If you want to belabor the point, you can belabor the point all you want.
Yes, but we're very excited.
So we'll be off back sometime mid-May. Can't guarantee an exact time frame.
Or I might just, be like one of those people on House Hunters International that just says, you know what, maybe we'd like to live here.
Yeah, we're going to look for a house. The problem is they do a lot of them in Ireland, but they never, they're always very small places.
Very small places. And we've actually, last year when we went there, we walked in neighborhoods, and obviously the buildings are close together, very narrow. So it's not like here. You just have to expect small.
Although where we're going to be staying in Dublin, we're actually going to be kind of more in a residential area. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
We're not going to be house hunting while we're there.
We're not going to be house hunting. Although we'd know that lady if we saw her.
We should.
The Irish lady.
Yeah.
We'd know her if we saw her.
And we'd be like, hey. And maybe.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we. And maybe not.
Maybe she doesn't like that.
It would be really funny if you ran into someone who had been on the show as a quote-unquote house hunter. We saw one episode in Dublin one time where they gave away the ending, basically.
Yes.
Because the person happened to be from Chicago. I think it was a couple. But they were from Chicago. And they're looking at one apartment, and we noticed that there was a map of Chicago on the wall. And then, that's miraculously the apartment they ended up renting.
If you don't know, it's all fake. And
let's not get sued.
Yeah. We've
been told.
What happens is you've already been there. You already are established in a place. You apply to be on the show. They show you other places, plus your house, and you're supposed to take it. Because I had a friend of mine from high school who she and her husband moved to Mexico. And when she said she was on House Hunters International, it was just being, I'm like, you moved 4 years ago. And it took a long time to get on there, but you're just supposed to take personal items out. So you're not supposed to know.
Well, they left the map up the one time. And I'm sure we were not the only people who recognized that.
I know. jig is up.
It is. So one thing that I don't know if I forgot. We had a lot going on last week. We talked about a bunch of things, but one thing that I was going to bring up, and I had totally, we didn't get around to it, was there was a story, and when I mentioned this to you, actually, I got it wrong. It was not on 60 Minutes in the United States. It was on 60 Minutes in Australia.
Oh.
But there was a story about parents in Australia who are purposefully concealing, or at least not telling anyone, their kids, when they have a new baby, their kids' gender, or more accurately, their what they are assigned at birth, right? And this part I didn't know. They refer to their kids as babies instead of babies. I read an article on the 60 Minutes Australia website. I didn't listen to the segment. And, I think that, they're trying to make it seem like some crazy extreme thing. Like, oh, these weird parents, they're trying to hide, the kid's gender. And it's not really, in my view, necessarily hiding it. They're just trying to raise their kids in a way that everything isn't centered on that. So I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad thing. But I also think, no matter what you think about what these parents are doing, you know, part of it, I would imagine, is that maybe they just don't trust people. You know, they don't trust the rest of us with the information because people are so nuts about all this stuff, right? And if you say, oh, we had a baby boy, they're going to just like say, oh, well, you need to get trucks and
play baseball
and make all these assumptions. Or if you say, oh, we had a girl, you know, it's going to be all, you know, the other sort of thing. Everything has to be pink. You can play baseball, but you have to have a pink mitt.
Yes.
And pink cleats and everything. You know, and they don't want to get involved in all that. But, you know, so I think some of it is not, maybe it's not so much that the parents are crazy and weird or whatever, is that they're just sick and tired of the nonsense, and maybe they just don't really trust people and the assumptions that people make. And so they're kind of opting out of all that silliness. I mean, when you think about it, all the obsession over your kid's gender is pretty silly anyway, right?
It is.
But one of the things I thought was weird in the article was, and I didn't watch the segment. I read the article instead, which obviously was based on the segment. But they said something that I think was inaccurate, that at least this is the way they portrayed it in the article, was they said that these parents were going to let their children decide their gender. And I think that's the problem with the way sort of, you know, like outsiders look at the whole issue of being trans or non-binary. No one's choosing their gender. I heard a story the other day about a lawyer who's a trans woman and came out later in life, and someone who was giving a high praise to this woman and a book she wrote said that they transitioned from male to female at age 53 or something, in their 50s anyway. And I cringed. I know the person who said that had the best of intentions, but that's not what happened. It's not, you're not changing from male to female. You're not choosing your gender. You are what you are. And sometimes it takes longer periods of time for people, you know, to recognize it. But so this thing with the kids, you know, it's not that the kids are quote unquote choosing their gender. Look, your kids, one way or another, are going to let you know who they are.
Yes.
They're going to let you know whether they are, you know, if your child is assigned male at birth, in all likelihood, your child will, you know, always identify as male and think of himself as male. But they're going to let you know that one way or the other, right? Same thing with a child who happens to be transgender. So I think what these parents are doing is not, quote unquote, letting their kids choose their gender, but just sort of backing off and letting their kids be themselves. And ultimately, your kid is going to tell you. So, you know, you kind of have a choice. Like if you try to force an identity on your kid, it, you know, in a lot of situations, that'll turn out okay because, in fact, that identity is who they really are. But in an awful lot of situations, you're going to be forcing something on your kid that's not who they are. And whether you like it or not, they're going to know.
Well, and I agree with that because it kind of does take the pressure off your child. If they are transgender, they know that that's okay. And they're not going to have to, like, worry about, like, and right. I've told this to David so many times, and now the whole gender reveal parties and everything have just gone bonkers and everything. When people just put all of that into what they're having and stuff like that. And I want to say, it may not be that, you know, yeah. So don't do right. that. And don't be like, I'm a boy mom, you know, and, like, right. just hammer that down. Because, in fact, if your child is transgender, then they're going to feel like, I can't be who I am because my identity, my mom wants me or my dad wants me to right. be this gender. And so I can't do anything about it.
Right. And I saw, you know, there was some expert interviewed on the story. I think the person was, the expert was an American. And they weren't being, the expert wasn't being critical of these parents, at least, again, as I read the article. She wasn't being critical of them, but she was saying, well, you know, maybe it's unrealistic because you can't really prevent this very gendered world from invading your space. And I understand what she's saying. I think if the way I interpret it, she's saying, you know, you have to understand that your kids are going to encounter a lot of gendered concepts, whether they're watching television, listening to the radio, you know, hanging out with their friends, going to school. But I don't think that's a problem. I think what you're, you know, you're, the idea is not to deny that gender exists. It's just to say things can be much more complicated than any one of us knows. And you just let your kid kind of get to the point where they understand who they are.
Right.
So you don't have to wall them off and prevent them from seeing examples of gender. But I think about this all the time. You know, if you're a little kid in America, certainly, everything you see, for the most part, is about, you know, cisgender, straight people having relationships. You're taught from the earliest age that that's quote unquote the normal, you know, kind of path, that you are the gender you were assigned at birth and you'll always be that, and you're gonna, you know, get involved with someone of the opposite sex and you're gonna have babies and all that.
Yeah.
That's like beaten into kids' heads. And I think maybe what these parents are trying to do is to say, hey, you know what, that's a form of indoctrination. Let's just kind of step back, let kids be kids. They're going to know who they are and what they are, and they're going to tell you. And they can tell you in a way that's positive or negative, right? If you insist that they have to be one thing and it turns out they're another, that's going to be a difficult moment in time for the both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you kind of step back and say, hey, you know, you're the one. You know who you are, and you tell me who you are. That's the thing. It's not you're choosing your gender. It's you tell me. You know who you are. And I think it's insane to believe that kids don't have some sense of what gender is.
Yes.
And some sense of what it means, you know, to be a boy or a girl, or a sense that they don't really fit what the kind of external expectations are. They know that. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. But they made, you know, the story kind of made it seem like, oh, these weird, kooky parents, you know. And I'm thinking, maybe they're not that weird.
I actually like that word, babies.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. And, you know, to be fair, I don't know that the reporters necessarily thought that. But that's the way it's portrayed around, you know, when you see articles after the fact. It's portrayed like it's this crazy thing. So I don't know that it is.
And I think when our daughter came out to us as transgender at 22, even though she knew we would not have an issue with it, we would embrace her and everything, there's still a part of that you're nervous, you know, kind of thing about what the outcome's going to be. But we obviously were 1,000% okay with it.
Right. And I just think that, you know, the way I look at it is from a parent's perspective, it's just like, you know, you're learning something new about your kid. It's not that your kid changed. Your kid was always who they were. The only difference is you know something about them today that you didn't know yesterday. So that's, you know, that's
a good way to put it.
It's a positive thing, not a negative thing. But I think a lot of parents look at it as there's some kind of loss involved. And again, that goes back to this idea that you were one thing and now you're something different. No.
You were
always. This is who you always were. It's just that you don't always recognize it and understand it right away. And, you know, going back to this thing about this kind of indoctrination that we put kids through, and it's unintentional. I mean, I don't think anybody, well, no, I think there are some people who do intend it to be indoctrination. But for a lot of people, it's just something we don't think about when we have kids, because we went through a certain, you know, path or a certain route in our lives. And we just kind of, it just seems in our mind to be kind of normal. And so I don't think it's always an intentional sort of indoctrination, although again, I think for some people it is. But, you know, we don't think about how challenging it is for anybody to feel like they don't fit into that pattern. And the more we tell kids at a very young age, this is just the way things are, this is just the way the world is, they can't, you know, understand necessarily at a young age why they don't fit that pattern. And, you know, it's almost like you're telling them, even though you may not intend to, you're telling your kid there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
You know, you don't say it, you don't use those words, you don't intend to put it that way, but kids know who they are. And they know if they don't fit patterns that the world expects of them. And if no one is there to say, hey, that's cool, that's all right, that's a good thing, it's natural for a kid to feel like, oh, I must be wrong. I must be broken, or I must be, you know, there's got to be something wrong with me. And it was worse years ago because, you know, when I was growing up, you know, there was no, I mean, nobody talked about these things at all. Now, at least, even if your parents don't talk about it and your siblings don't talk about it, at least there's conversations out there in the world that you, at a certain point in your life, you can listen in on.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of get the message that it's okay. But you can't imagine how stressful it is for a young person, you know, because in your mind, you want to live up to all those expectations. You want to be the person that your parents expect you to be, that your friends expect you to be, that your teachers and, you know, all the adults in the world expect you to be. And if you know that you're not that person, then you're really left to kind of try to figure it out on your own. And, you know, people are not always super positive, and we're not always really smart about, you know, figuring things out. I don't think there are very many kids at a young age when they realize that they're quote unquote different. You know, say, oh, but that's cool. I'm unique. I have this special thing to offer. That's not really like the way most kids probably, you know, think. It's more like, I don't fit in. I'm an outsider. I have, you know, friends, but they're not really my friends because they don't really know. I could never tell them. I can't tell my parents or my family. You know what I mean? And so we put kids through all this unnecessary stuff. Even if you have the best of intentions, even if you go around saying, oh, I'm totally open-minded, I'd be fine if my kid were gay. Your kid doesn't necessarily know that.
True.
You know, unless you're willing to have those conversations in the home.
Yeah, I never really thought about that, is that not only are they kind of isolated within themselves, but then they feel like they can't tell their friends. They can't, and it's just kind of like an unfortunate thing.
You know, humans are social animals, like dogs and wolves and, you know, bees and ants. I mean, we don't just live in isolation. We form social groups, and those groups have kind of like a structure, right? And we have roles. That's what being a social animal is. That's why dogs are social animals and cats aren't. You could put, there's like that island in Japan with all the cats.
Yes.
You could have thousands of cats living in close vicinity to each other. They'll interact with each other. They'll be friendly with each other. They may even enjoy each other's company. But they don't form a society like the way a pack of dogs would, or wolves or whatever, or like humans do, right? And that's a great thing. That's like the greatest strength that people have. Because if we didn't have, you know, this sense of community and a sense of responsibility to each other, we wouldn't do all these great things that we do. We wouldn't have medicine and science and all that. But at the very same time, it can have the opposite effect if you're in that society and you think, well, I don't fit in. I don't have an assigned role, or I don't, my assigned role isn't what I want it to be, right? That's hard. And we're not talking about adults. We're talking about kids.
Yeah.
We're expecting little kids who might come to the realization, they may not have the vocabulary to understand. They may not understand words like, you know, gay or bi or transsexual. I said transsexual. I have to laugh. That's not a term that people use. It's not a term that people should use. But I saw some person going off on social media, this guy who claims to be gay, complaining about this Dylan Mulvaney, the young trans woman who
popular on TikTok.
Is very popular on TikTok. And he was going off on this young woman, and he was trying to say that he wasn't anti-trans, but he just thought there was something wrong with her. And my comment was, hey, how about, like, don't police the way a trans person is?
Yeah.
You know, don't say I support trans people, but you're not being trans in the right way.
The way I want you to be.
Right, exactly. And he responded with that word, with the word transsexual. He goes, well, my transsexual. And I'm like, what decade
right.
is
Right, what
this?
Are you talking about? It?
So I don't think that guy was acting in good faith. Anyway. So I had a he happened to be arguing with a a friend of ours who I won't name, but
okay, we'll talk about that later.
But we've gone to visit in New York, and a friend of ours from out east. Anyway, so I sidetracked myself by using the wrong term, but that's why I used it. But you know, so if you don't, as a kid, you know, you don't have the vocabulary necessarily, which by the way is why we should give the kids the vocabulary to use. But kids don't have the vocabulary, so they don't know how to say I'm this or I'm that or whatever. All they know is that they're different and they don't fit these preconceived ideas, and that's just putting so much weight on the shoulders of children. And you know, we're supposed to be the adults in the room. We're supposed to be the ones who make sure they don't ever feel that way, and they don't have to be alone, and they don't have to feel like right. outsiders. But we're so, nowadays especially, we're so afraid to you know, talk about these things. We're so afraid to let teachers just, you know, be honest. Like if you have a teacher who's gay and they're in a relationship, it's absolutely, to the kids in the classroom, it makes zero difference whether you're gay or straight. You know, mentioning that you, if you're a man, mentioning that you have a husband, or a woman mentioning that you have a wife, it's not any different than a straight person saying the Correct. Same thing. You're not going beyond that. You're not talking about anything intimate. You're just mentioning a relationship. These kids know those relationships exist.
They do.
They certainly know that the straight relationships exist. It's not going to kill them to know that the gay relationships exist.
Well, and I was thinking, you know, a lot of people say now, you know, oh, there's so many more transgender people. It's like, there's always been.
Mm-hmm.
But for decades and decades and decades, those people were not given an option. And so they had to live their whole right. lives in the wrong body.
Right. I mean, that's right. And that's the thing that's so insane is that you hear this, you know, Bill Maher talks about this kind of stuff. I mean, he if he ever had a soul, he lost it a long time ago.
For sure.
But he talks about that, you know, Andrew Sullivan, again, an out gay person who has, you know, just regularly trashes trans and non-binary people. It's madness. But he talks about a Barry Weiss, this crazy person we've talked about before. How come there are so many people? And it's literally like, you know, I look back at when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, and I'm like, you have no idea the absolute misery people like you put the community through, even if it was unintentional. You just did because you wouldn't even acknowledge people existed who right. weren't straight and cisgender and so forth. And now you're going to look back and say, well, I don't understand. Where did all these people came from? Hey, man, it was your fault that there were fewer people
right.
out. And it isn't even just that there were fewer people out or there were people in the closet who couldn't come out. There were people who couldn't even really fully recognize who they were because they've been so conditioned to think that being gay was a terrible thing. We didn't even have the term transgender to use.
No.
I mean, the term existed, but we didn't know it. It wasn't a part of our vocabulary. We used these, you know, misguided terms even when, you know, movies like, oh God, I'm blanking on the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, right.
I actually like spaced out on the name of the movie. Even when a movie like that came out, we didn't know how to describe the characters, right? So we didn't even, you know, even then, even enlightened, open-minded people didn't even necessarily have the vocabulary. And now you're going to weaponize that against people back then,
right.
or flip it around and weaponize their, you know, that suppression against people who feel like they can come out today. It's really just madness, and it's vile. And the people who are saying this don't even seem to grasp just how vile they are.
And that's the thing. It's like if the shoe was flipped and they are looking at people online talking like this, they would be outraged, you know,
yeah.
and it's like you can't even recognize what you're doing to people. I don't get it.
I don't either. Another thing, you know, this is just me rambling, but another thing that really gets me these days is how many groups, and it's not just in terms of dealing with, you know, the queer community, but how many people nowadays, you know, use their status as parents as a weapon to, you know, harm other groups. all of these groups that are going after school boards and trying to keep books out of school libraries and trying to prevent teachers from, you know, teaching real, actual, honest-to-goodness history. They all call themselves, you know, there's a group, Moms for Liberty. They always use their status as a parent as a weapon to attack other people. Oh, we're concerned parents. We're fighting for parents' rights. I'm a proud mom or a proud dad. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're a jerk. And the thing is, if you're prejudiced against really any group of people, but especially, well, I won't even say especially, really any group of people, you're really not a good parent, right? If forget about the queer community for a second. Just set that aside. Let's say you're just a garden variety white racist. You're telling your kids that if they have black friends or Hispanic friends or Asian friends, that you're going to judge their friends harshly. You're telling them if they grow up and get into a relationship with somebody who's black.
I was just
going to
say the same thing.
If they have children who are, you know, Asian or black or whatever, you're judging the people who matter the most to your kids, their friends, their coworkers, the maybe a spouse, maybe their own children. There's no way to be a bigot and be a good parent.
Right.
Because you're, for one thing, you're teaching your children horrible lessons, but you're also putting your children in an impossible situation. You send your kid out into the world, they're going to encounter people who are different. They're going to have Jewish friends, black friends, Hispanic friends, Muslim friends, whatever. If you're berating those groups of people in the presence of your kid, and then you send your kid out into the world, how are they supposed to deal with the world?
And what are they supposed to say? Yeah.
And you're not going to prevent your kid from having friends who are in the groups. But not that it's worse, but it can be even more real when you're talking about animosity towards gay and transgender and bisexual people and non-binary people and so forth. Because again, your kid may be that person. If you're sitting at the dinner table railing about trans people, railing about drag queens, railing about gay people and so forth, and your kid is sitting there, you don't know what message you're sending to your kid.
Absolutely.
You know? So I'm tired of people who weaponize parenthood. And what's, of course, crazy about it is they talk about, well, it's parents' rights. We're here as parents. We're worried about kids. No, you're not. You don't care about my rights as a parent. You don't care about anybody else's rights as a parent. You don't care about anybody else's kids. You're actually attacking other parents and attacking other kids. You may not want your kid to read a certain book. What right do you have to prevent my kid from reading that book?
So true.
You know?
Yeah, it is crazy. But it is what you're saying. Like, if you are, and you don't even know if you're talking about that to your kid, they could be having something internal going on, and now they can't talk to you because you've just alienated them.
So, by the way, we have to point out that Tucker Carlson got fired.
Yes.
He was too much even for Fox News. And the crazy thing about that story is that not only did he get fired, but apparently he's the subject of, well, he got mixed up in the suit that this Dominion voting machine company brought that they settled for $750 million, actually a little more than $750 million. He was one of the main people who got Fox caught up in that lawsuit. There's another lawsuit still going on where the smart tech or whatever the company is actually asking for $2.5 billion in damages for the lies that these people told about the election. But not only that, apparently, I didn't know this, Fox just got hit with a sexual harassment lawsuit by a woman who worked on his show. And holy cow, is he a vile person. If those allegations are true.
Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, like, he, you know, here's a guy, again, who's always out here demonizing gay people, demonizing trans and so forth, trans people and drag queens and everything like that. Yet he joked, quote unquote, imagine air quotes around the word joke, joked in this woman's presence about having sex with underage girls, right?
Nice.
So here's a guy who's going to call, you know, people in the community groomers and all that stuff. But naturally and unsurprisingly, he's as big of a creep as anybody. So good riddance to Tucker. But I had to laugh.
Yeah, definitely good riddance.
Yeah.
Well, we're at our 30 minutes already. That went by fast. That is a true story.
It went by fast.
So we'll be on hiatus for 2 weeks, as we mentioned. But we'll be back with good content, sharing our Ireland trip, seeing Bruce Springsteen, and everything that happens along the way.